professional, which I'm a Czech practitioner and faculty member for the Czech Institute. And the Czech stands for Corrective Holistic Exercise Kinesiology. I first got into the fitness industry about 22 years ago, working in Ireland, did my NCEF through Limerick, Talmont, and then started working in the fitness industry. Started to travel a little bit overseas and got lucky enough to work with some nice clients. I worked with Philip Walton, who was a PGA golfer in Ireland, and then I got to work with some Olympic athletes in Ireland, and then I worked with Tennis Ireland as well for about 3 years in a sports academy or tennis academy called the Star Academy, and that was in Westwood Club in Dublin. And yeah, that was kind of like my introduction to the fitness industry, and from there it evolved into then working with clients that had injuries, and that's how I came across Paul Cech's work when I came over to Australia in 97. 98, and then explored my journey with Paul's work since 2000, going over to England to do my first course, and then from there just traveling to San Diego. So I've been qualified now as a Czech professional for 12 years or so, and over the last 6 years I've been working towards becoming a faculty member, and I've been a faculty member for the last 4 years, teaching exercise coach, HLC level one, and Czech practitioner level one. And yeah, so I also run the affiliate program here now for the Czech Institute. So we run all our courses and all materials to do with Paul Cech's work. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment. I'm a full-time lecturer and work from my own studio here in Sydney, Place of Chi, with my wife, who runs a yoga center there as well. And we treat all our clients with the Czech system, and I'm a strength coach, and I work in rehab as well, so I specialize with the practitioner side in rehab. So that's about it.
That is perfect. Okay, first topic I want you to just jump into is nutrition and food. So I just want to let you go away and talk, and then I'll try and steer a little bit if I can.
Okay, and are you looking, Lorcan, in regards to my general standpoint on nutrition and food, or is it just in regards to training people, or is it anything particularly?
Just a base level first would be perfect. And okay. Then your standpoint would be excellent.
All right. So for anybody that works with the body and works with sports or activities, from myself, from an early years, I found out that by having better food, I could, you know, kick the ball better, or, you know, pick up the slitter and give it a hit, or, you know, just play rugby or whatever sport I was doing. I found there was a definite relation. And I'd always got into exercising. So food has always had a relationship with me. With the better quality food you have, the better you can work your body and refuel your body and rebuild your body. When I went through then and did my formal nutritional qualifications, that kind of gave me a little bit more understanding of where the macronutrients were, proteins, carbs, and then the multivitamins and the nutrients and minerals and phytochemicals. And then later on, I started to realize how food can actually have a dramatic effect on your biochemistry, your hormones, and then how it actually can cross over to different systems in the body, like the autonomic nervous system, and drive cortisol levels up, which winds up the system and can bring on disease. So this was then very interesting for me to start to find that there was different types of food out there. And that's where I got my education around what was food that was farmed properly and where the food was coming from, and cleaner food. So I've done a lot of work on organic foods and biodynamic foods and Rudolf Steiner's mechanism of bringing nutrition back to the soil. So now the plants have something to eat to make them good food. So there's two classifications for me. There's what we call matter out there, which is kind of, for me, the conventional food that has lots of calories to offer but not much nutrition. And then there is what I call food, which is what your grandparents probably ate and what your great-grandparents ate, because everything was organic back then. Everything changed. The farming system changed around 1946. So from that day in the industrial era, and we've able to be mass-produced, which has given us, you know, benefits and be able to cut down on hungers and so on. But unfortunately, at a slight cost, because our soils are being depleted by the way we're doing modern farming, and we're not actually getting the nutrients that we used to get in our vegetables or in our grasses that our meats are being, or our animals are eating, so where we're getting our meat as well. And now, unfortunately, we're now even changing nature by farming a fish and giving fish that food that were never in their food chain. So we really go back, when you look at nutrition, go back to the soil, go back to how Plants need humus in the soil, microorganisms to actually take nutrients up so they can have good quality food. And from that, you can get organic food that's not sprayed on, not artificially interfered with, and will have its own vitality and the food enzymes. Most of the foods today that are processed, that are packaged, that are labeled, they have been processed in some way that unfortunately sometimes kills off some of the live enzymes, which are needed to unlock some of the nutrients and minerals. And that's why a lot of people have to reach for the multivitamins and the supplement shelf, because they're not even real foods. So the argument always comes back to then down to cost and price, and that's really how much you want to invest and what the cost and the value you put on health. And for me, looking around, what I see some people eating is material. It's not food. I don't classify it as food. So the first thing I do when I'm working with rehab clients, sports performance, world-class athletes, we start to work on how they're fueling their body. What are they making their body out of? And if they're going to work out and they need to repair from a disc injury, well, what are we going to make the body out of? Well, the last material that you ate didn't work, so we got to up the ante here and get some good raw materials in there. So we need to look at quality versus just quantity. And that's where they have to make their first decision, really, where they want to go and how they want to do this. I've seen in my 22-year career, that eating conventional food and trying to repair from ligament or tendon or surgery is a long, long road, where if you have good nutrients and the good building blocks, your body repairs quicker. So I'm a big fan of organic food, and we use a system of a primal pattern eating system that Paul Cech has developed from the basis of metabolic typing, which was William Wilcott's work. And that allows us to start to balance out and respond to the food's needs or the body's need to food. And that's really how we work with our clients with nutrition and educate them on what is good food and where food comes from and why you should go and look for your local farmers and grow your own veggies. And if you have that opportunity to do that, if not, just source good, you know, certified organic food. So that's my kind of wrap up on food and nutrition for you for the moment.
That is excellent. That's exactly what I was looking for. So you hit the nail on the head there. So just working on from that, a point that Paul, or just from the stuff, the Czech work that I studied, Paul always talks about working in. So could you speak about that a bit more? Because just that, I find generally people don't do it. So if you could maybe speak about the benefits of it and what exactly it is.
Well, it's definitely one that's not been popular when I was in Ireland. Now I've been away from Ireland for about 10 years, but I pop back every now and then. But working in is where we restore and replenish. And we have the philosophy that you can't work out if you haven't worked in. So think of yourself as a bio battery or a rechargeable battery. Yes, food helps, sleep helps, water helps. And if you're not getting those three things, then we're not recharging properly. And this could interfere with someone that's playing footy or playing Gaelic, and you know they're not recovering from matches from the weekend. And that's basically because they're not doing the work in. They're certainly doing the workout. They may be partying afterwards. They may be doing other things that are causing the body not to be able to rest, i.e. drinking coffee too late at night or alcohol too late at night, so the body doesn't recover. So working in is doing gentle exercise or gentle movements in the body. And the classical example would be Tai Chi or yoga, but not Bikram yoga, because that's more like an exercise. For me, it's not really a yoga for me. I would like to see people relaxing and going into meditation as a form of working in, or just sitting in nature or going for a walk. As long as you're not being startled or you're not, you know, listening to heavy metal music in your earpod or iPod or whatever. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're taking time out during the day. There are pause points. We use zone exercises, and zone exercises are a little bit more digestible for, you know, the modern person, especially in you know, modern day life, that you can have time where you can do some very basic movements that are derivative from yoga, Tai Chi, Feldenkrais, and some of these classic principles and practices that have been going on for thousands of years. So it's based on the Eastern philosophy, where you work your body back in, you restore energy, and it's what we used to do when I played football and rugby, and you do a cool down session afterwards, or when I was doing athletics, you do a cool down. But it's more to do it doing in the AM and the PM. The Taoists call that the time in the morning is the best time to do it, and they do it for about a 20-minute segment. Traditionally in yoga and other practices, you could do it at sunrise and sunset. So there's many different ways to do it. In Paul Cech's book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, he goes through all the zone exercises. And those zone exercises are basically doing working in principles for different areas of the body to bring blood flow, oxygen, nutrition, and water to that area so they help the body heal. So when I give a client that has maybe a back injury or a shoulder injury, I'd give them an exercise that would gently move that joint and bring oxygenated blood, nutrients, and minerals into that area. But also that's bringing energized blood and that's bringing balance to the system as well. So it's very beneficial for meridian lines, for chakra centers, for understanding how the body's energies can be broken down. But more importantly for me, when I'm working with the physical, it's also bringing the nutrients to rebuild the tissue or strengthen up from the workout we just did. So that aids in recovery. It's a little trick that we've been using for a couple of years with our athletes.
Oh, cool. Just on from that, something that I always find after sports is swimming in the sea, and you know the sea in Ireland is fairly cold majority of the year. Do you use any cold practices at all? Or would you even consider that working in? Just your thoughts would be brilliant.
That's not so much working in, but most definitely that is something that can shift you from what we call a parasympathetic to a sympathetic state. And what it is, and when you use cold showers, it can slow down edemas or tumors or bleeding or anything of that that's caused by rupturing or exercising or pulling the muscle fibers apart. But it is really good to aid the recovery. It's also really good for what we call the smooth muscle filaments in the body. So around all your organs, like you've got muscles on the outside, you've got smooth muscle on the inside, and those have to contract. And a lot of people's digestive system and inner organs don't get that stimulus. So when you hop into a cold shower, which I use, or the cold sea, or you get into a plunge pool after a sauna or something like that, you're actually stimulating these muscles, and you create what we call the hunter's reflex. The hunter's reflex is where the body pulls the blood from the extra extremities into the center, and you get this wave contraction in the internal abdominal muscles to bring that blood flow to protect the organs, because the body feels like you just dropped into a cold stream, lake, whatever. So it's a defense mechanism. And then as the body relaxes, and once you start to feel that and you get about 2 or 3 minutes in a cold shower, you'll feel it. Or when you're in the sea for a couple of minutes, you'll feel that. Where if you kind of had enough and your body starts to cool down. And once you start to cool down, that's when you should pop out. And people are different. They have different tolerances. But anywhere from 3 to 6 minutes for most people in a cold therapy is really good. And it also helps with androgen levels, which are the hormones that help growth and repair in our body. So by stimulating the system, I know like the 40 foot in where is it?
Dunleary.
Dunleary. God, jeez, I'm forgetting my in Dunleary, you see the swimmers there every day and the Christmas swim. And the same in Scandinavia and most of the places around the world. There's always those people, the vital kind of older people that have found this benefit. And it's been going on for thousands and thousands of generations. And, it's not something to... keep out of your toolkit. I think we should all have that in our toolkit, and it's very beneficial for, I'm not getting that old, but I'm 40 now, and when I want to work out, if I want to do my heavy workouts, I got to do my recovery sessions too, and I got to pay more attention to them if I want to keep on doing what I want to do for the next 10, 20 years. Otherwise, I'll just be like some of the other guys I used to train with that, don't go into the gym as much anymore or can't lift or can't do anything they want to do in sports or activities or, kick a ball around with someone or, pick up a hurl or whatever, so.
That is very impressive. Another favourite of mine would have to be the High Rock out in Portmarnock, and even the Gillamines in Waterford. They are just very renowned spots, and you find the people there are particularly friendly, whether it's linked to the goodness, I'd say it is. But, okay, next point.
I'm very familiar with that High Rock in Portmarnock because I'm from Malahide, so I've definitely jumped in there a couple of times.
Brilliant. Yeah, just for anyone that's listened, may check the tide first, because... Yeah. Going there low tide is not fun. So, right. So sleep now, sleeping times and things that affect sleep. If I could just get you to speak a bit about that. You mentioned caffeine and alcohol, obviously.
Yeah. So sleep is the big recoverer. It's our Dr. Quiet. It's the time when we can kind of relax and our body can unwind and the hormone levels should be balanced out and the body goes into a repair state. And sleep, well, there's a lot of information out there in sleep and in the general practice. If you go onto Harvard Sleep Labs, you'll get most of the information that's current and up to date. And most of the science points towards anywhere between 8 and 9 hours is what the body needs to have a physiological and mental repair. There are studies and people saying that they can get away with 6 hours or 4 hours, but I've never seen anybody in real life do that. They're the ones that are diseased. People have sleep patterns. We know that people that go on shift work die 10 years younger. We know people that don't have over the 6 hours start to have physical ailments as well earlier in life. So some people say they'll get away with 8 hours sleep, less than 8 hours sleep, but I've never actually physically seen that in my clients, and it doesn't really come into practice in true life. It's more like a theory for me. But there are research out there to show and back up my side of the point, but there is also conflicting information. So it's just depending on what you want to read and what you have come to your own conclusions with. So 8 hours is the minimum that I look for all my clients. Also in 2008, when I was at CanFit, there was a gentleman called Dr. Lenny Kravitz, who's a professor from New Mexico University. And he cited a research study that showed that if you work out an hour and a half, so say if you play a game of GAA and you played a tough game, you would need an extra hour sleep. So he's recommending, or this research study recommend, that you should get 9.5 hours sleep if you do at least 1 hour of vigorous activity during the day. And that's a challenge for most people, to get that amount of sleep, not for professional athletes. And the athletes that do get that extra sleep recover better. And that's what a lot of people that you know, don't work with athletes or don't get to go to Olympic stadiums, or, you know, we've done some work for the AIS and, you know, Olympic work in Ireland as well, and pro athletes, that, you know, this is not just a sport, it's a business, and you have to manage the athlete, and sleep is a big one in the recovery. So most of the pro lifters out there would have a nap during the middle of the day, and most athletes would as well. When I played rugby over here, most of the first grade guys would try and have a nap. And, you know, I had the guys I played sevens rugby with as well. If they were a representative or state, there was a couple of guys that were on New South Wales teams and so on. And they would look after their bodies a lot more. And sleep was the prime one because, you know, as you know, rugby can be a high impact sport. And there's a lot of energy expended, like most sports. So sleep is very important. Things that affect sleep. Best times to get to bed at sleep are between 10:30. Anytime after 10:30, you're going against the moon and the sun cycles, which we are totally affected by in our hormonal levels. It controls the tides. It also controls, and you can start to see patterns of 28-day cycles with females, 28-day cycles. So we are very influenced by the moon's energetic pull as well, and we should be sleeping at that time. So it's best to start winding yourself down about 3 or 4 hours before you go to bed. So that would mean like dimming the lights at 6 o'clock, not having any stimulants. I wouldn't have any coffees and sugars, you know, anytime after 3 o'clock if you're trying to wind down, because they stay in your system for a half-life of about 6 hours. So if they're in your system and you're trying to fall asleep when your body's going into a psychological repair, your system is still wound up, so it's not relaxed and it can't do the repair. So that interferes, and that's why people can wake up sometimes like feel like a hangover and sluggish, because they've used stimulants, or there's been sugars, or they had a dessert, or they had a, you know, a cup of tea and a Tim Tam or something late at night, and they jacked up the system, and they didn't realize that that has an effect on the body. And it's so subtle, most people don't even see it. Other things are bright lights at night, watching TV too late. Anybody that has sleep issues or sleep apnea issues, we get them to get away from all the electronic equipment about 2 hours before they go to sleep. Just do the old-fashioned read a book with a light coming over your shoulder, not going onto your skin. Any light that goes in your skin, you've got sensitive skin cells, and that raises cortisol and suppresses melatonin. And the melatonin is the sleep hormone. So at nighttime when you come in and you dim the lights and you don't have bright lights flashing in your eyes, that'll start to raise natural melatonin. So a lot of people that have to use sleeping tablets and so on can generally start to work their hormones back in their favor by using some of these simple little tricks. Turning off electrical blankets, anything electrical in the bedroom, even alarm clocks that are electrical can interfere with sleep. So if you're waking unrested, that could be something. Most HLC-1 practitioners would be able to go through a track of questions for you to do a checklist to see how your sleeping position or your sleeping environment is. So, but the major ones are the stimulants, and we should be getting 8 hours of sleep. So get away from the stimulants before bedtime, reduce coffees, teas, or sugars as much as you can, and stay away from the electronic equipment and wind yourself down, you know, with gentle music and candlelight or dim lights or dimmers, or, you know, put shades on your lights so they're not bright. How's that?
Yes, and adds, well, it's certainly not an iPhone beside your bed. That's what probably everyone has. And
yeah, if you have the iPhone, there are different screening kind of electromagnetic kind of devices. I use a Q-Link one, but you should just turn it off from the airport mode so it's not bringing in the electronic. But it's definitely not something that I would recommend any of my clients to have an iPhone by their bed and use that as an alarm clock. Put it at the end of their bed or put it, you know, a couple of meters away, as far as they can away, so they have to get up to turn it off. But I know that's an inconvenience for some people.
Yeah, so, yeah, I know myself at times to find the phone beside me, and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I just have to just turn it off or leave in a different room, basically.
Yeah.
That's the point that probably hits most people. Now, moving on to that, when I see movements, everyone automatically, I think, gets an idea, you know, heavy gym lifters and that, but I want to talk about movement to be healthy. And that's the point I really want to hit. So if we can get you to talk about that. And you spoke about times of the day as well, which I know is very important, but for a lot of people that worked in 9-to-6 role, and how do you recommend integrating that to people's lives?
Okay, well, movement is where you can fit it in, and I work with all my clients, as any Czech practitioner should do, is to identify when does the client have time to put these in. And most definitely morning times, people can usually get a couple of minutes, even if it's only a half hour extra. Sometimes at lunchtime, if they're around the gym or the facility is close, they could jump in and do something there. And then sometimes in the afternoon or evening, depending now coming into the summer months here, we can have a bit of a stretch so we can get out there and get more active. But it really comes down to their choices and where they put their value on, whether it's just sitting around, you know, at lunchtime chatting to their colleagues, or whether it's working on themselves or taking the time out for themselves. So really, it comes back down to the client when they can do it. Ideally, I want to get people moving in some way every day, whether that be just some stretches, some mobilizations, some chi work or working in zone work. And most of my clients, if they come to me, they'd be probably on some kind of corrective or strength conditioning program. So I would have them on maybe a 3-day program or four days in the week. But we would ramp that up to maybe 5 or 6, depending on their sport, profession, or in their rehab program. So movement for me has to start with the 7 primal patterns. That's squat, lunge, bend, push, pull, twist, and gait. And they're basically what you need to be able to do to be able to survive on this planet as a human. So you need to be able to do some form of a squat, bend. Every sport or biomechanical analysis can be broken down, or you can break down each sport by a biomechanical analysis. And you can look at that all those sports will have derivatives of their moves or combined combinations of those 7 primal patterns. So once I get a client proficient in those, or you are proficient in them, I can say that you have a functional body. So one of the things I'm doing over the next couple of months is working with UltraFit magazine and bringing out a series on that. So if any of the listeners are subscribers, or they look at UltraFit magazine over the next couple of editions, I've been commissioned to write 6 articles on those primal patterns, which will be informative to teach you how to use these movements. But they're the basics of movement, and we can't move if we can't stabilize and if we can't refuel. And if you overmove and you don't replenish and recover like we just talked about, movement won't last too long. Movement should be a long-term thing, and we should be able to do it for the rest of our life. And it's very important that we're doing it correctly. So I always assess my clients before we start. We look at posture, we look at core function, we look at length-tension relationships. Then we look at the health of the organ, the health and the stress of the body, and whether the body can take extra movement. Because more movement on already a cracked system or an injured system or a disease system is not a good idea, because that could be the last straw on the camel's back, to say. So we need to look at, can we add more movement, and what type of movement is the quality of movement, and does it really relate to what the client needs? Some people need more squatting, or some people need more bending during their day or their activity or their work. So again, the type of movement that should be used is very different. And we use a lot of Swiss balls, we use a lot of body weight training, we use a lot of functional training movements of, you know, dumbbells, barbells, cable machines. But we also use a wide diversity of other kind of rehab tools and sports conditioning tools as well, kettlebells, club bells, medicine balls. And we use some types of machines sometimes for loading some clients when they can't stabilize themselves and they need the support from the machine. But that's not too often in my practice. So that's basically where I come from movement, unless you want to ask me any more questions about it.
Yeah, I might just hit another point. For the person that sits in an office chair, for like ergonomics of, you know, a Swiss ball to a standing standing table.
Yep.
Is there a way or any tips that you recommend for someone that basically is stuck with this sitting at a desk where they can work it into their life?
Yeah, well, most definitely a lot of my clients that have disc pathologies, or if you have SI joint or lower back injuries, it's very important to not sit for long periods of time. So, you know, most definitely put a reminder on Outlook, or, you know, if you're sitting on your computer, or some kind of an alarm that gets to remind you to stand up and move every hour. But I certainly recommend sitting on a Swiss ball, but you have to ease yourself into a Swiss ball, because when you sit down on the chair, by sitting on the chair, you turn off all your hip and lower back muscles. But when you sit on a Swiss ball, then you've got them engaged. Now, they're not working really hard, but they are stabilizing. So you're now asking your body to stabilize for maybe 6-7 hours a day where it hasn't been done that before. So I'd bring in 20-minute segments where you sit on the ball for 20 minutes, then go back to your chair. Once you've done that for a couple of days, then you could work up to an hour, do an hour on the ball, hour on the chair. And then after about a week, then you can try the ball for a day or two and use the chair when your body gets tired. And then after a period of a couple of months, you'll have the ability in your back and your stability. And that means that when you're sitting at rest now, you're slowly turning over, and you're keeping the ball moving as well, which is pumping, you know, lymphatic flow, blood circulation, and helps reduce, you know, for ladies, varicose veins, hemorrhoids for guys, compression on prostate for guys, prostate cancer, testicular cancer. It stops in the compression of the ovaries, the womb, aids in digestion. I mean, the list goes on and on. But a lot of people find the Swiss ball just that little bit challenging at the beginning, because they kind of go jump straight into the deep end and just try and sit on the ball. And after an hour or two, they're just so tired, they just can't. They just say, this is too hard. So ease the way into it. The standing station is also a great alternative, Lorcan, where you can stand up, and I would make sure that you can get your elbows at 90 degrees. The visual display should always be in front of your eyes. When we're sitting down in a chair, we look for 90 degrees at the knees, 90 degrees at the hips, and 90 degrees at the elbow when the hands are on the keypad. The biggest mistake that we see is so many people using laptops that the screen is down so low, so therefore they have their head down. So having some kind of a stand, put your laptop on, or a docking station would be vital. And if they have a visual display unit in work or screen, make sure that the screen is up high enough so that when they look at that their eye line should be in the middle of the screen. Otherwise, they're looking down, which tilts their head, which can cause kyphosis or rounded shoulders and back problems and put more stress in the lumbar back. So ergonomics is a great thing. And if you've got poor ergonomics but have a really great gym program, unfortunately, the ergonomics is going to win out, because you're only in the gym for 1 hour a day, but you may be sitting down in the office for 8 hours. 1 versus 8, I know who's going to win there. So I've seen this many times where people have good programs, but they don't realize that they haven't set up their chair and work. They've got bad seated posture. They're also in a car that may have like a racing seat or a bucket seat that holds their back in a poor position too. So they're making things worse. And then they get home and just flop on the couch in some ridiculous position too. So it's kind of one we got to watch a little bit as a trainer. And there are some tips for some of the listeners there.
Excellent, excellent. Now, you just hit it there a little bit, digestion. Mm-hmm. Obviously, your digestion system is huge and massive to the body, but could I get you to speak more of maybe things that could aid digestion, or what to look for when your digestion is good?
Okay, well, the first thing we need to understand a little bit about digestion before you understand what you're going to do with it. So, you know, digestion starts when we see an object or we smell something, and it starts from the mouth. And the biggest issue with digestion is that people don't chew their food. You should be chewing your food till it's a liquid. That gives more surface area for your enzymes, your digestive acids in your stomach, and your pancreatic acids to actually break down the food. So chew your food until it's a liquid, and then you swallow it there. Then the other thing that we need to look at, as I just said, hydrochloric acid in the stomach with your digestive enzymes, and they have to be strong. So a lot of people, unfortunately, don't take sea salt, which you need to produce your own hydrochloric acid in your body. A lot of people are deficient in hydrochloric acid. So this is a lot of people that get, you know, burping and, you know, indigestion, flatulence, all this kind of stuff. Because the body doesn't have enough time to break down, and the juices aren't strong enough. The other big thing that a lot of people do these days that's a mistake is they drink vast quantities of liquid when they eat their food. And what this does is dilute down their acids. So now it takes longer for the body, and if it doesn't have the transit time, which means the length of time that the food stays in the intestinal tract, if that's not long enough, then it doesn't have enough time, the acids don't have enough time to work and break down the food. So you're not getting all the nutrients from the food. And this could be classic where someone doesn't have a response to good healthy food and good clean food and their energy doesn't come up. It's usually a problem with the digestive system because you need to eat live foods to get live enzymes. So we all probably know about probiotics from yogurts and so on, but we also need to use other foods and cultured foods, and things like pawpaws and pineapples have great enzymes in it. So a lot of people that have digestive issues, I sometimes have to get some blood work done or some test work to find out, do they have deficiencies? So I would look at high enzyme foods, but eating sea salt, it will help digestion. Using, obviously, and make sure you're well hydrated. Other things to do is stick away from foods that have colorings, digestive enzymes, or sorry, additives, preservatives. Any kind of foods that have those in there, they'll kill the good bacteria inside your gut. And so does antibiotics. So when anybody ever has antibiotics, if they don't reculture their gut for a good 30 days after that, may set themselves up for digestive issues in the future. So other things that really help, getting some support for the liver and detox system, because the detox system as well can really help. So lots of green leafy vegetables and eating, you know, your foods in certain ways can help as well. One of the biggest mistakes that people can make is when they have fruits with meat. If they have them too close, the fruit will ferment in the stomach. Fruit only takes about 40 minutes to go through the digestive tract, where meat takes about 4 hours. So that meat and fruit mixed together will stick there and ferment. The fruit will ferment, and they get a lot of burping and so on, and they can have irritations, but also set themselves up for more serious issues with fungal and parasite infections, because that's the kind of food that these creatures like. So they're opportunistic, and if they have quite a lot of this undigested food sitting around the colon, and that's where they set up camp, and then you have some more little issues to work with. So very important to, as I said, get some green leafy veggies in and foods to support the liver, milk thistle, some of the other herbs. I work with naturopaths and other nutritionists to help us to create a program for whoever we're working with, and everyone's individual. So there's no ready, set, go. That's the blueprint for everybody. But that's where Paul's book can really give you a good overview on where you can get started and how to eat and be healthy.
Yeah, I might just add to that. Is it the last 4 doctors you ever needed to know? The ebook I found really, really good. So
yeah, just add that. That's awesome as well, because it backs up how you can do things practically and gives you some exercises and some audio stuff as well to listen to. And then with the workbook, you actually go through a learning process rather than just, you know, reading a book. Yeah.
Yes. And just on this point, fermented vegetables, do you have any thoughts on them, or what do you think?
Yeah, I use quite a lot of sauerkraut, kombucha, and kefir, and these are just like ginger ales and so on, home fermented ones. We extract our own whey from raw organic Jersey milk, and we use them in recipes, or you can make coleslaw dressings and so on. So cultured foods, you know, pickled foods, crevasses, anything like that are really great. The book I recommend for a lot of my clients is Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon and the Weston A. Price Foundation, because they have some easy recipes to follow and follow in an old traditional style of cooking. And just reminds me of my grandmother's cooking back in Ireland, like, you know, when she would make stocks and stews and, you know, do this kind of cooking that unfortunately is now everybody's kind of going to get them from the jar. But what they're using in jars is just vinegars. They're not using actually cultured vegetables. You can get them from organic stores and health stores, but when you get them off Woolworths and Coles and stuff, they're just a traditional kind of commercial product that actually don't have any live enzymes in them. So they don't have the nutrient value, so we're missing out on that. So I'm a big fan of cultured foods and using the different kind of fermented foods to help restore good function in the body. And that's where you need to keep on bringing those foods in so that you do have a healthy digestive and balance. There's a guy called Dr. Bernard Jensen, and he did a Healthy Bowel Guide. And what he talks about is that we should have a friendly bacteria to an unfriendly bacteria ratio. The good bacteria should be 85%, and the unfriendly bacteria should only ever reach about 15%. But that's not what we're seeing in the modern society. It's actually reversed. He's actually finding the opposite, that it's sitting around 80 to 85% unhealthy bacteria and only about 15% good bacteria. And that's why we have so many colon digestive issues, diseases around that area. And that's the processing plant of all your energy. If your digestive system breaks down, your days are numbered. Most diseases start from there because the body can't then replenish, keep all the organs and your immune system high and everything else because you're getting all your food from your digestive system. So if there's sluggish, you know, irritable, you know, not recovering from long-term injuries, I would start to see if you're eating a good food, how come the processing plant is not getting all the energy from that food to rebuild your body? So it's obviously something going on with you're not eating the right foods or the manufacturing plant inside is not getting all the nutrients. So digestion is huge. It's where we do most of our work, Lorcan, I'd say.
Yeah, that is really, really good information. Right, you made a point there, you extract away from the milk from the Jersey cow. Can you explain how you do that?
Well, all we're doing is when you have milk that's raw milk and you set it out on the counter, it'll start to turn. And once the raw milk starts to turn, you can put it through a Hessian bag and put it into a bowl. And as you sieve it through or as it drains through the Hessian bag, what will come out will be the protein and you'll be left then with the curd or the whey and the curd and the rest of the milk produce there. And as you turn the produce inside the Hessian sack, it'll leak out whey, and that's where the whey we harvest, and then you use that in salad dressings, or you can use it in like what I call a real protein shake, because you've got real raw whey that hasn't been, you know, isolated or hasn't been manufactured in a way that has to be rehydrated and loses its enzymes. So it's a real food. And all that process is a little bit time consuming because it's just a long process that spreads out over 24, 48 hours. But it's not hard to do because you don't really do much except for pour the contents of the turned milk into the jar and then through the Hessian sack. So it's a pretty easy process. It's all outlined in that book, Nourishing Traditions by Seth Klein.
Brilliant. That's just what I needed. So, okay, moving on now. I wanted to hit on happiness, just kind of in correlation with the Dr. Happy. Maybe if we could just speak about that, and in with it, core values and goal setting, if you can.
Okay, I'll give you a quick wrap. When we start with any of our clients, the first thing we want to find out is what's their one love? What are they looking to achieve to make them happy in their life? So what's their motivating force behind why they do everything, what they want to achieve and where they're going? Also, happiness is very different for other people. But, you know, for me, a lot of people need to be happy in themselves first. So many people are so reliant on families, friends, work colleagues, doing other stuff for other people, but don't give enough time for themselves. So when I really sit down and say, are you happy what you do? Sometimes there's some moments where they kind of go, well, you know, I'm doing stuff for the kids, or the husband, or the boss, or I'm working towards the paying off the mortgage or whatever, but they're not really doing stuff that they're passionate and they love and they're happy. So this whole philosophy of the four doctors is also very close to Hippocrates' philosophy of three major things that you need for all societies to be supportive and healthy. And it is to make sure everybody's happy in what they're doing in their occupation, make sure that we have enough food and sustenance, and make sure they have enough time for play. So, you know, if you want to be a plumber, you'd be a plumber. If you want to be a sports guy, you'd be a sports guy. If you want to be whatever. So are they happy in what they're doing? And a lot of people have unfortunately fallen into careers or activities or doing stuff that they're not really happy in. So we sometimes have to work out what's their one love and what do they love enough to make a change in their life? Or what do they love enough for them to do the program or to follow through with the lifestyle changes? Do they love, you know, a pain-free body enough to get themselves out of pain? Do they love a disease-free body enough to start making some changes? Because if they're sitting in front of me at my stage of training, they haven't done something and it hasn't worked. So we need to identify and find out, work together as a coach. I can coach them through it. I can't do it for them. So I've got to educate them on why. And the only way I can hold them accountable to that is get them to make sure it's making them happy. So I need to be very clear on what the client's goals are. And I design our programs and we design our lifestyle programs around what the client is trying to achieve. And that's different for everybody. Some people want to climb Kilimanjaro, other people just want to pick up their grandchildren, other people want to run 100 meters in under 10 seconds. You know, it's all different. So I need to make sure that they're happy in themselves and they give to the I first. Then they can healthily give to a we relationship in their partnerships or family, and then they can give the all relationship when they're out in, you know, extended families, communities, societies, work, and so on. So really, the happiness for me is about getting happy within themselves, and are they happy in their life balance, and do they live, you know, a perfect week, a perfect day for them? Who's running their day? Is the world and the mortgage and the bank and the boss running their life, or are they empowered and are they running their life? So what's making them happy? So a lot of that is coming down to goals, and we do some extensive goal setting sessions. Paul Check has a system called the PPS system, and in that there's some lessons that we specifically go, lesson three, into goal setting. So we identify, you know, what their legacy, their goal, their big vision and mission is. And then we drill down on how you can set goals and set achievable goals. And, you know, we set process goals. So we look at short-term, long-term, medium-term. But we also then start to look at, you know, what's a goal that can be achieved. And we, you know, clearly state those goals and make sure they have affirmations and repeat those goals. And revisit them on a daily basis to see what they can do today to bring them closer. And every choice that we make, we have three options when we have anything in front of us, and we can have an optimal choice, which would bring us closer to our goal or help anybody that's on our dream team, or, you know, you're working in a company to achieve something so that we all get bonuses or something. I don't know what the goal may be, but we're all benefiting by the choice I make on whatever decision. A suboptimal choice would be something that wouldn't go healthy for me or be bringing me towards my goal or drag me away from my focus of my long term. And then there's indecision or not making a decision. And sometimes we need to stop and pause and not do anything to collate more information before we make a decision. But the other worst one is where we procrastinate and we just sit on the fence and we just have empathy and we just don't do anything. It's just like, sure, whatever, you know, don't make a decision. And that to me is also, you know, where a person needs to sometimes be reminded of what they're going for, and are they getting some happiness in there during their day? What gives them the happy time? What gives them the me time? What during the day gives them time for them to reflect on their own goals and what they're trying to achieve and where they're going in life? And what have they done today that's helped them to achieve that? And that's really about, you know, checking in with yourself on a daily basis. And that's what we talk about before doctors, about checking in on yourself and how much quiet time you had today, how much, you know, stuff you didn't make today that made you happy, how much stuff that you were engaged in that made you happy, or, you know, you're happy about your day's work, you've achieved X, Y, Z. Your doctor diet, how much nutrition, food, water you're getting in, and what quality and what balance. And then doctor movement. Did you get to move today? What type of movement? How did that work out? Do you need to work in? So did you balance it out? So basically that for me, and happiness is where we start. But that's a huge topic, Lorcan, and, you know, I could talk on that for days, and I do on some of my courses. So
yeah, that's really good what I got there, and that's it's really good for people to lead on from it as well. So I'm very tempted to ask about rock stacking, but I don't want to jump into that quite yet. Final question, what's coming next for you in the next, say, year or so, or what's your plans?
Okay, in the next year, well, I'm a full-time lecturer, so I teach all the Czech programs. So I've got a couple of courses now coming up. Got not teaching the one down in Melbourne this month, but I've got quite a few courses coming up where I'm teaching here in Sydney and then in WA. And then we've got a friend of mine, Dan Hellman, who's a physical therapist, and he's coming out here to do golf and the Czech performance series. And Dan has had the pleasure of training a US Masters winner, a green jacket owner. So he's coming out, he's got a passion in golf, he's one of the top physios I've ever met, and he's also a Czech faculty member. So he's going to do a course here at the 68, and then more courses then through the end of the year. I go to New Zealand as well for FedEx, which is a convention over there, do a bit of consulting for some of the big chains around Australia. And then I have Paul Check coming here in April and May next year. So that's usually a big event for us. We have him doing HLC 3 and HLC 2. Which are the advanced programs for practitioners that want to use lifestyle training and holistic training to work with clients with disease, sickness, and try and regain health and well-being. And then we've got Paul doing some one-day workshops as well. So that's a action-packed, and somewhere along the line, I'll probably get a break or get a visit to Ireland or get some family over. So that's about it, I think, for the year.
That is a great answer. That's something I'd love to do as well, be you spoke with having Paul Cech over there. I'd love to take part in some of them courses. But I just want to thank you so much. It's really, really been good information, and I look forward to chatting to you again.
Great. No worries, Morgan. I'll give you a bit of a heads up on what's going to happen in HLC.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Morgan. See you now.